How's it going? And welcome to episode 228 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening or watching. We've got a great show lined up for you all. But before we get into all that, Kevin, glad to be back. We have what, 4 weeks left, 5 weeks left? How many fab runs do we have left? Man, I rely on you for this information sometimes.
Believe this one and four more.
This one and four more. So, all right, we got five more Sundays of excruciating stress of figuring out how to spend our $25 we have left. I spent a bunch of money in my Glarf League last Sunday, and I didn't even realize I had that much left in comparison to the rest of my league mates. It was a good Sunday to do it. There were more than ample amount of players that I actually needed that were available in that league. And I won all my bids. So that was a nice, pleasant surprise. But I think I'll be scratching at the bottom of the barrel for the remainder of the season. But I have enough to get by the rest of the season. But it was a good re-up of where I'm at in that league. So it was a good use of that extra money.
That's awesome, Adam. In the couple of leagues where I have the extra money, I don't need it.
Yeah.
The leagues where I need it, I don't have it. Right. So that's nice usually that you had it in the league that you needed it there.
That's a good sign, right? That's a good sign that right.
Not needing it,
not eating
a great
it.
Sign. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I just wish
I could like trade my fab dollars between leagues.
If there was any way that you could do trades in the NFBC, it should be with fab. You don't have to trade players. Somehow you should be able to trade fab. I don't know what you would get for it. I guess if you couldn't trade players, but maybe
would you even negotiate with Vlad Sedler in a league like that?
I would not. No,
no. Absolutely not.
Well, here's what you could do. You could put your own players up for bid. And then if nobody like you put, like eBay, and if you put a minimum, a quiet minimum, like, hey, if somebody were to spend $50 on this player, I'd let them go.
I'll take it.
And I'll take the $50. But if I only get a $40 bid, I'm keeping them.
This is intriguing. We might have to follow up this on this sometime before we go too far down a rabbit hole right now, because this time of year when you're dropping your closers where you're good in saves or your steals guys, right? That would get really interesting really quickly.
We start making notes. This is a whole offseason episode right here. Like,
yes, it is.
Like in my home league, we do rule changes every year. There's always like five or six of them that people write up. I submitted two last night laying in bed. I'm like, oh, these are good ideas. I'm going to put these in here. So we talk about them in the offseason, but it happens all the time. But you never get to change the rules in NFBC unless you play in a different format. And that's, I guess, the beauty of playing in all the different formats is you get to try different things and with different rules. But ultimately, the rosters are always the same. There's never trade. Well, are there any leagues in NFBC where you can do trades?
Not public leagues, but I thought they had something. I forget what it was exactly, but there was something I think I saw that I was like, oh, I didn't even know they had that. But
I know they have keeper leagues
publicly available.
I know that there's keeper leagues, so they're all over the place, right? There are lots of don't, when we say the term NFBC, I think we're referencing main event, we're referencing online championship, because they're so plentiful in the sample size for rosterships and they're well known. But between the gladiators and the keeper leagues and the all the different varieties, there's quite a few. We are let me put a disclaimer: we do not make any money by talking about the NFBC. Nobody is giving us any ad revenue for mentioning it. We just play in it, and we can appreciate it. I play in Yahoo as well, and I appreciate Yahoo for what it is and what it does. They're just very different platforms. All right. Well, we got plenty of news to get into, but I am making a mental note about. We're always looking for new off-season topics to talk about. I think that might be just a fun one when we have not a lot of player news or anything like that to talk about. So we'll put that in the bank and we'll cash in later.
That's a great November topic right there.
Exactly. before
we have our draft season beginning, no episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking of that today, right? You sent me a screenshot of the first 11 rounds of the meatball draft, and I had been looking at it. I've been looking at it more since. I'm fascinated by it, and it actually got me into draft season prep a little earlier than I have been in the past. If we're gonna start drafting our draft and holds here in 5 or 6 weeks, which the last couple of seasons we have, if we're going to do that, we should be prepping right now. So I've started putting together my depth charts because the big weakness for me in the past in those early drafts is I haven't really put playing time numbers together, at least of what I anticipate, even though we're months ahead. And I've started doing that this season. So, I think we'll be ready for one of those episodes here in 5 or 6 weeks as well.
Nice. Well, we'll get into that as soon as we're done doing fab. Let's just make that deal, right? let's get the fab done first. But we have plenty of news to talk about over the last week between injuries and call-ups. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. This is call-up season, right? The middle and toward the end of August, before September rolls around, but with enough time to keep the rookie eligibility for next year. So lots to talk about. Of course, let's start off with the bad news. We've got some injuries. This one's not an official IL stint, but Marcus Simeon is still in a walking boot is now in a walking boot after fouling a pitch off his foot in Thursday's matchup. And very well may miss the rest of the weekend. Overall, should we be expecting an IL stint? If he's going to miss that much time, is it just in Texas's best interest to put him on the IL and let him heal up completely? Or is this a good sign that, like, hey, if they're not putting him on the IL now, that they're confident he'll be healed up by the end of the weekend and we can get him back into our lineups for next week?
Yeah, I could see that going either way. Leaving him in the walking boot. Maybe they're just worried about swelling or something along those lines. However, you know, I was looking at this Texas lineup quite a bit today because there's a couple of intriguing players to me with the injuries they've had. I think in the position Texas is in, unless there's a huge swing this weekend, it's almost to the point where Texas can consider themselves out of the wild card contention in the AL. And it's not because of how many games they are back. It's because of how many teams there are ahead of them. And it may not seem like a lot, but it is. And you and I know this as Red Sox and Royals fans right now, who are both in front of Texas. But my Royals started the day only two games back of a wild card, but that is going to be a tough two games, right? With the teams that it is. And it's been a little crazy. So I could see Texas almost throwing in the towel here any day now. And if they do, Simeon should be out for the year, in my opinion, especially the way he's performed this year. Let him rest, get healed up, and get back to work in the offseason.
Yeah, overall, his season's obviously been a pretty big disappointment. He had been putting it back together in the second half, playing a little bit more, moving back up the lineup and what have you. Maybe not as much of a transformation second half as we've seen out of like Michael Harris the second, which has been phenomenal everywhere I have him still. Still Simeon still being relevant and a positive contributor in the second half. So this is a little disappointing. I think you're right. That would be the smart baseball move even if not mathematically, but just like, come on guys, we're done. We're out of this. Save him, just save what he got left out of him. This is Marcus Simeon, it's close to an Ironman as we've seen in this league in a very long time, playing every single day. Like he was in lineup every single day when he was in Toronto. He was playing every single day after moving to Texas. Give the guy a rest and not just a rest because you're missing out on playing time, but you know, just he's earned it.
This goes all the way back to his Oakland days, Adam. 2015, he played 155 games,
right?
159 and 16. 17, he had some injuries. Then 159, 162. Then COVID, 162, 161, 162, 159. Yeah.
It's like he just misses like those two or three games because, I don't know, man gets tired.
Exactly.
Well, somebody else that's going to be missing some time, but unfortunately this is for an IL stint, is Jordan Westberg of Baltimore. They also lose Adley Rutschman to the IL with another oblique injury. I don't know if I can say luckily, but luckily it's a different oblique injury from the injury he had earlier in the season. Yes, we have two obliques in our body. It's not just obliques as a whole. And so he's got to deal with the other one. I guess luckily it is a light injury is what it was reported as. So I'm not sure how long he'll be out for with it, but at least if you add the word light to it, it makes me feel a little bit better about it. On a more positive Baltimore note, they did see the debut, and this is before Adley got hurt. It's not like they called up Samuel Basalo because Adley got hurt. They like happened almost in tandem. But Samuel Basalo did make his debut earlier in the week. And then Adley went on the IL. And then, like dominoes falling, Basalo signs an 8-year contract or extension, guaranteeing him, all the monies with the Baltimore Orioles just a couple days into his major league career. And with that, he becomes pretty much the everyday catcher once he actually starts playing again. Because as you mentioned, he hasn't played in a couple of days. And that was ultimately reported because the Baltimore Orioles gave him a very, quote, rigorous physical. And you take that as you want. I didn't see any other details of what the word rigorous means there. But I'm sure they put him through the ringer if they're going to give him $8 million. Eight-year deal. And buy out some free agency as well. So with all that Baltimore news in there, let's go all the way back to the beginning, Kevin. Jordan Westberg being out for at least, the 15 days. Any other movement on the infield with him being out?
I am a little bit intrigued by Luis Vasquez in this situation. He's got two of the three starts at third base since Westberg went down. And it appears to me that he probably is going to get most of the run here. And, he's been a 2010 guy in the minors in the past. Prior to this year, he had 14 major league plate appearances. That was for the Chicago Cubs last season. Mid-20s strikeout rate projection, so not too bad. That's one of the first places I go to guys that don't have many major league at-bats or any. So if you're going to keep that strikeout rate down, this isn't a guy that can give us a ton of power or a ton of stolen bases. But this is the type of guy that this time of year can be really valuable if he does indeed, hit 240, 250 or better, as he always does in the minors. He's only projected for 220, 230 range. But if you think he can sustain a bit better batting average, like he has shown that he could do in the minors, these are pretty steady across the board numbers where he isn't going to be a boon for you in any category. But he can probably just stabilize your team, expect 15 team leagues and deeper. A guy like this can be very valuable this time of year if he is indeed going to get this playing time that I think it appears he will.
Yeah, I mean, he started on Tuesday in the two hole, obviously before Jordan Westberg went down, or as Jordan Westberg was going down, didn't play on Thursday or didn't start on Thursday, and then started back in the eight hole, though, on Friday. So we'll see if that continues. They moved Jeremiah Jackson down the third base, which is a little surprising. I thought if anything they might do is move Kobe Mayo back over to third base and let him, right, go back to his original position, and then just put Mountcastle at first and let somebody else DH. And obviously that could still happen over the course of the next week. We're going to see Westberg out for at least another week and a half. So there can be that. Something I didn't put on the notes that I think is worth also adding on when it comes to Baltimore. You talked about it at during our recording last week. They did indeed get Colton Cowser back. He's been starting in center field every single day since returning on Sunday. And we questioned whether or not that would impact Dylan Beavers. It has not. Dylan Beavers has been playing every single day in the bottom third of the lineup, but still every single day playing on the, both the corner outfields as well. So that outfield, and that it leaves Jeremiah Jackson and Dylan Carlson to alternate every other day. And apparently Jeremiah Jackson getting some extra time at third base now. And so we'll kind of see how that irons itself out, but it sure does look like Dylan Beavers also holding his own in that time frame has earned, you know, a longer look, and he might get a day off here or there, but sure looks like he's going to continue to be that everyday corner outfielder for the foreseeable future until Baltimore decides to try somebody else out in one of the corners. Adley being out, even if it's for a short period of time, are you almost at a point where you're like, okay, you also have been a pretty disappointing piece to my roster all season long. Are we cutting Adley Rutschman at this point with only, as you mentioned, five fab periods left?
I'm waiting just to make sure. And of course, this is Friday. I don't mean necessarily waiting past Sunday evening. I want to try to get a little more news here just for a more definitive timeline. But yeah, because I was looking at a couple of catchers today. There's a couple coming up with some availability that have decent matchups and schedules coming up. Texas, we were just talking about, faces a lot of lefties this week. We're going to see Jonah Heim. He's got availability. So there's an example. There may be better options than Adley Rutschman, even if he is healthy right now.
It's one thing to be holding three catchers. It's another thing to be holding your third catcher on the IL. Even for a 2-week period and when there's only 5 weeks left. So just, you know, manage your roster the way that you best can, but sometimes you've got to make difficult decisions, because even if you do drop them now, somebody else picks them up, they've got to hold him for a week on the IL. They're not going to get him for more than, you know, the last 3 weeks of the season. And there's still a big question mark whether or not he'll come back and what the playing time will look like. As much as we love Adley in general, I mean, they just gave a man an eight years deal.
I want to, because I was looking at this one when I was looking for our category targets for this week, it would appear that it would be a great matchup week for Sean Murphy. He has one hit this month. That is not an exaggeration. One hit this month. So just because Atlanta has a lot of lefties coming up, I wouldn't be jumping on that Sean Murphy. Just a note out there, if people see that Atlanta has all those lefties coming up and we're going to see Sean Murphy in a two-catcher league, that sounds like a no-brainer, but it really isn't right now.
Yeah. All right, let's get out of Baltimore. We'll head over to, we're going to skip that one and go down to Tampa Bay. We'll stay in the AL East. And my boy, Big Joe Boyle, back
our, to Durham. Our.
Yes, excuse me. I'm not trying to take
many,
it over.
Yeah, many yeah. of ours, many, yeah. many, many of our friends
Man, love this guy. Yes. I had him in a lot of places. I will not after this Sunday, obviously. He got demoted. I mean, he very well could come back up. But honestly, let's just be honest. Joe Boyle does his best work in AAA. Go look at his game log for the Durham Bulls, and it mostly is phenomenal, and it got everybody, well, it got myself, yourself excited for what he had been doing. He'd been doing it so well with such explosive numbers that I actually overlooked at the time, like how many walks he still was giving up right in the minor in AAA. And you're like, oh, it looks like some of the games he went a couple of no walk games. So you're like, oh, he's got the control under control. And obviously that turned out is like narrator comes in. He did not. And so he'll be going back to Durham, maybe doing some good things. Maybe Durham Bulls just want to get back to winning all those championships that they were winning for so long as Tampa Bay was having really good teams come up and felt like every Tampa Bay minor league team was winning a championship at one point or another. during bowls as well. Maybe they're just using Joe Boyle for their playoff run, their AAA playoff run. Either way, Joe Boyle dropping at pretty much every level in any kind of size league for the remainder of the season? Or are you hoping, I mean, he can't come back up the same as an IL, right? Is it 10 days or 15 days that they have to be down unless there's an injury? That those rules are still in place here as well.
Right. And that may be what's in play here, Adam. You made a great point with the postseason for the minor leagues, because Tampa has this weird day off this Saturday, tomorrow. Yesterday, if you're listening on Sunday to this episode. Yeah, they have Saturday off, and then they have Thursday off, right? So Roster
don't need him anyway.
Has Adrian Hauser not have him pitching next Friday, but he would have his normal 4 days rest on Wednesday, and then they have an off day. So they really don't need a fifth starter until September 2nd, which he could be back. So that's a great point. And with it being that far out, I wouldn't even begin to speculate on who it might be if it's not Joe Boyle. I mean, we're talking 2 weeks away nearly before they need this fifth starter.
Yeah. So there's not even like a one-for-one swap. You know, Uncle Ted's always talking about Ian Seymour. He mentions him in there as well. He's not quite stretched out anyway, but they don't need to fill that. They don't need to backfill at this point. Tampa Bay is also not one to stray away from bullpen games and just utilizing their bullpen in interesting ways. So, yeah, good call out there. Tampa did something else interesting. They are called up their shortstop prospect, Carson Williams. He made his debut on Friday, and last time I checked at the stat line, he had gone 2-for-4 with a home run, 3 RBI, 2 runs scored. Not a bad debut. I don't know. That was in the 7th inning, so he might have gotten in another at-bat since I looked at that. But at least 2 hits and one of them going over the fence. Tampa's had some infield middle infield fluctuation. Obviously, trading away Jose Caballero kind of freed up some question marks there. Taylor Walls is in play. But Carson Williams obviously has, you know, the prospect, quote, pedigree. He's one of his top prospects. Is Carson Williams destined to just be that, you know, that left side of the infield with Junior Caminero for Tampa for the remainder of the season and then obviously into 2026?
I think so. We may see Tristan Gray back over at shortstop a time or two just to be safe. You know, if you played every single game here on out, slightly possible that you could break that at-bat threshold for rookie eligibility. So he'll get a day or two off the rest of the season. Not like I'm saying each week or anything, but yeah, I think they're going to want to see what they have here on that left side, just as you brought up the rest of the way.
Yeah. And maybe I used too much money last week. But like, if I still had that quote hammer is this debut that we saw, his major league debut, all adrenaline? Are we expecting that moving forward for the rest of the season? If I need a middle infielder, should I be paying up for this? If you expect him to play that often.
Yeah.
Playing time.
If we get that playing time over the weekend that I anticipate at this point, what else are you waiting for? What are you saving your money for? Is the way I would look at it. I wouldn't spend all my money. We still have 4 fab periods to go after this one, but yeah, there's really not much worth saving it for. Couple of pitchers that we might get back. I'll just bring up my wild card right now, Adam. Kyle Bradish he's up to like 4 to 5 innings and we should see him back this week. In fact, we're being told by the team, they haven't given us an exact day, but this week, I think they say 25th, 26th or 27th, we'll see Kyle Bradish. So that's one option if I need pitching more than I need a middle infielder, just for an example. But yeah, there's not much to be saving our money for anymore at this point.
I mean, you've mentioned him a couple of times in the wild card section. I'm still waiting for Cincinnati to call up Sal Stewart as well.
I think we will see him, but
But is it going to be one? It's going to be obviously later than Carson Williams. And is he going to perform or play as often and or perform as well as Carson Williams? if you're not paying up for Carson Williams, why are you saving it for Sal Stewart? Put it
exactly.
So that's your original point. All right, we got to move on to some pitching news. But before we do that, we are going to take a quick break. All right, we started off with Joe Boyle being demoted for pitchers. Now we expect Mick Abel to be joining the Minnesota Twins on Saturday. I think it's still listed as a TBD or TBA officially, but has been reported that Mick Abel did travel with the Twins over the weekend as well. So he's with the team. Just haven't officially put him on the roster yet or put him on the expected starter grid. This seems pretty obvious. I think a lot of people were kind of excited to see Mick Abel get moved from Philadelphia to Minnesota. I questioned it just because of Minnesota's history or recent history with their young pitchers calling them up, not giving them a long run into games. The list goes on, but I'll start and end it with David Festa as being the prime example. Unless your name is Pablo Lopez and you have a track record, even Bailey Ober struggled for, before he struggled, he was struggling to get all the way through the fifth inning. What are your expectations with Abel? And I would expect this is I'm up for the rest of the season unless I force your hand to push me back down. What's your interest level in Abel now that he's in Minnesota?
No, your first point is exactly where I'm at. If I'm chasing wins, Abel's not on my list. I don't think he goes five. Five is the absolute max that will go. That's what we've seen out of Minnesota for a decade now. Mm-hmm.
Well, another debut, an actual debut that happened today on Friday, Bubba Chandler finally gets the call by Pittsburgh. He started for the Pirates on Friday, making his MLB debut. If you weren't watching it live with Nick Pollock over at pitcherlist.tv, playlist.tv/pitcherlist, you're doing it wrong because that was awesome to watch his reactions and calling that game while we were all watching it, because MLB.tv is free. It's free, like the free weekend or the free week of MLB.tv. So if you don't even have it, you can still go, you can watch it and you can get it for free for the week and watch it over at Playlist. But again, like my expectations for Mick Abel, Bubba Chandler finally up. Don't expect him to go back down. He'll keep his rookie eligibility for next year. Obviously, Pittsburgh will keep their extra year control for holding him down as long as they did. How excited are you or to spend all of your monies on Bubba Chandler?
It really depends, right? What is Pittsburgh going to do? Mm-hmm. Right. I think today, Friday, was kind of a showcase, because we saw Brandon Ashcraft pitch the first five innings and then Chandler come in and get a save by pitching four shutout innings following Ashcraft. That's not what they're going to do going forward. I think they were showcasing, hey, these are the next two guys we have coming to join Paul Skeens, right? We knew his stuff was nasty. We were excited to see this. We probably should have seen it a long time ago. Sure. I think he probably does get the innings we want to see out of him in the five starts that we probably get the rest of the way. So, yeah, if it's pitching you need, Bubba Chandler's probably at or near the top of my list this week.
Leave it to the Pirates not only to hold the guy down as long as they did with such promise, with such hype, so much hype.
Have him enter a game in the sixth inning.
And then exactly, he doesn't even get to start. Never mind, he doesn't get to start the game. But he comes in the – it's kind of ridiculous. But he got the save, of all things. That's fun. I guess that's fun in its own way. Almost forgot to even mention this, but I'll throw this in here since we're talking about pitchers making their debut. Shane Bieber, as we mentioned it last week, is slated to make he made his debut for Toronto, and looking pretty good overall doing it, going six innings, got the win, 9 strikeouts, just letting up 1 earned run in, I think that if I'm doing math correctly, was it 2 hits total, or 2 mm-hmm. hits and walks? I don't see the full box score. I'm just looking at his, you know, over this category, 5 category stat line with a 0.33 whip in 6 innings. That's to Uncle Ted's point, is that going to make him very, very expensive for what little money we all have left?
Probably. He's funny, right? Because it has bitten me over the years many times. I've never been really big on Shane Bieber for some reason. I can't figure it out. I know there will be people in my leagues, even if it's a league where I do have a little more money than most, somebody's going to like him more than me, probably. But definitely, you know, when we say we're not high on somebody, typically we're talking draft season. We can't be picky this time of year. So absolutely, no. Someone of the quality of Shane Bieber is absolutely desirable on almost any roster right now.
Who gets higher bids then? Is Bubba Chandler or Shane Bieber?
Overall, Shane Bieber, but there will be those leagues where there's the prospect lovers that'll go higher on Chandler, of course.
Fair enough. All right. Well, plenty of starters, I guess, getting the call or getting us excited for spending all of our monies. As you mentioned with Carson Williams, if you're saving your money for like somebody other than Shane Bieber or Bubba Chandler, what are you doing? See, I spent most of my money on Nolan McLean last week. And so I probably won't be winning any Bubba Chandler or Shane Bieber's where he is available. But we'll see. You know, I'll still be putting in bids on him. Shocking. I know, more at 11. All right, let's get into the bullpens here. The Astros lose one of their top setup guys in Bennett Sosa, who did get he got a save the other day after Josh Hader getting in, but we do still expect Brian Abreu to be the closer, though the Astros aren't really giving anybody any opportunities to close or to earn a save with, what was that, like 7 straight losses at one point. It was pretty close to that. But Sosa goes down with left elbow inflammation. Don't want to see that, but he is replaced by the recently signed Craig Kimbrel. Craig Kimbrel continuing to have his name put on jerseys at the major league level, joins the Astros. Man, I got to ask the question. With Hader down, how many saves is Kimbrel going to get between now and the end of the season?
Every other time you have asked me this question, it's been greater than 0, but I think it is 0 with this Astros team. With not only Abreu, but Houston, we also, let me pull it up real quick. They have a better bullpen than needing Craig Kimbrel. I think at this point they still have Okert, right? I would venture to guess they'd even throw Brian King in the 9th prior to Craig. Well, other than the fact that he is Craig Kimbrel, right? And that's the only reason. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with 0, and I may be wrong. He may get a save or two, but I think it takes an Abreu injury for sure, or at least he might get an opportunity if Abreu's gone 2 or 3 consecutive days. But yeah, he's not going to be the guy. Unfortunately for our fun factor, because the couple of times earlier in the year, Atlanta and I forget the other team, I really thought there was a legitimate shot we might see a decently long run of his usage, but I don't see that for Houston, which means this is where it will happen, right?
He only played the only major league team he played for this year so far, and I also can't remember who he signed a minor league deal with besides Atlanta. But he got called up by Atlanta, played 1 inning, and then was cut. It was like.
And it was the 9th.
I thought that was, yes, but I thought that was his swan song, right? Oh, cool. Yeah. It's like signing the 1-day contract so you can say I retired with, you know, the team that I played a good chunk of my career with. And then he goes and signs a deal with Houston. Obviously, with seeing the opportunity losing Josh Hader, probably for the rest of the regular season, By the way, if you haven't seen that note, Josh Hader probably out for the, so they're, you know, still hoping he'll be there for the playoffs, but I think you can very safely drop him if you were kind of holding on to him for an extra week to see if you get him back, in the team, especially in leagues where you can't hold an IL spot. But I just wanted to look up how many saves he has. 444 saves on the year, so he's not close to like a major milestone. He's not like at 449 and he wants to get to 450. He'd need 10 saves to hit the 450 mark. That's guaranteed not to happen, at least not this season. So yeah, I think I'm with you. Brian Abreu, when Houston Astros decide to actually, you know, close out a close game in the win column, should be the one getting the ball in the ninth inning. Other bullpen news to just watch out for. Tanner Scott was activated for the Dodgers today off his IL stint. Kirby Yates is expected to be back on Saturday. Nobody has really stepped forward for the Dodgers primarily to take over like a quote closer role. Do you expect them to just give Tanner Scott his job back? Or do you expect them to continue to rotate through? Because Tanner Scott wasn't exactly he wasn't a pristine closer for them when he was healthy either. And so what are your expectations for the Dodgers bullpen now that they're getting two of their, you know, supposedly solid reliever options back in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning period?
Yeah, I think we go back to seeing Tanner Scott most days, not necessarily every opportunity, or even really necessarily, you know, 80-90% of them, but more times than the rest combined. A majority of the ninth inning opportunities, I think, go back to being Tanner Scott's.
And then how well he actually performs in those situations will be quite telling, and will force the Dodgers' hand as well. And the last bullpen piece here, staying in the greater LA area, we'll move over to Anaheim, where Kenley Jansen's been dealing with rib pain for the last day or two. He hopes to and has since avoided an IL stint, but it's been reported that he's just stopped throwing altogether in between outings or on the side or wherever you throw a baseball. Are you expecting this to be forcing the Angels' hand to put him onto the IL as well? Obviously, Kenley Jansen has had his own string of health issues, usually related to his heart. So ribs protect your heart. I don't know. That's a little bit of a stretch, I think. But if Kenley Jansen's going to miss, you know, if he's going to be out all weekend, and again, it's a Marcus Semien situation. It's like maybe that's a good thing, and he doesn't go on the IL. That means they're like, all right, he's going to be healed up and we'll be fine for next week. But if you had to speculate at that point on Sunday for Fab, who out of the Anaheim bullpen are you eyeballing?
Yeah, this is interesting. I really think roster resource, he's five or six slots down in the bullpen. But Robert Stevenson came back off the IL on Thursday. That's where I'm specking. I know a lot of people want to see Detmers in that spot. I know there's Brock Stewart's there now, I believe.
Oh, sure. No, he's on the IL for the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. I knew I just looked at that name somewhere. But who am I thinking of? I got it right here. But I think Robert Stevenson is who I, Brock Burke. That's who I was thinking of.
There was a Brock.
We thought we might see him in the ninth. In previous seasons, I think if I'm making a stab here, it's Robert Stevenson. It's been almost 2 years now, but draft season prior to 2024, Adam, I know you were excited about him being the closer.
How can you not
in LA? Yeah.
The Luis Garcia, of course, got the save on the first day that Kenley Jansen, Jansen got the loss on Tuesday. Wednesday comes along, Jansen's dealing with a rib injury. Reed Detmers got the win and Luis Garcia got the save after him. And so Luis Garcia seemed like the guy that would be taking over the role if something were to, you know, be traded, Jansen were to be traded or something else were to happen. But then all of a sudden Reed Detmers kind of shot right back up into relevancy this time in the back end of a bullpen. They have plenty of lefties. So obviously Detmers is, with Brock Burke being one of them that you just mentioned. So it's not a concern about handedness in this case, at least not with Andrew Chafin and Brock Burke being options in the middle of the bullpen. So a lot of names that it could be, but yeah, you nailed
it. And we've seen Chafin in the ninth before as well.
What's that?
We've seen Chafin in the ninth before as well.
To some chagrin, and then, you know, sometimes some success sometimes. Yeah. All right. So we've got a couple more pieces of news, but we got a lot of news and we finally hit a point where we need to take another break. All right, Kevin, let's get back into, well, it's kind of a mixed bag here with hitters and pitchers. Going to Atlanta, just as a piece of housekeeping, Austin Riley will be missing the rest of the season. I don't think Atlanta's making the playoffs at this point anyway, but he wouldn't be in it. After having core injury surgery, he will be remaining. He will be missing the remainder of the year. Should be ready for spring training. So obviously, if you haven't already dropped Austin Riley, who's been off and on hurt for a little bit now, you can safely do so.
I got a quick note for you, Adam. The Atlanta lineup. I mentioned they have all these lefties that they're facing this week. I think all three over the weekend. So that was very intriguing to me. You look at Atlanta's lineup, and it's been over a week since any position other than catcher changed. Right? They're Atlanta. The entire coaching staff and front office says the season's over. Right? They made a lineup card over a week ago, and they're done. That's it. So
just make copies, really put in the copier.
You know, when you didn't even ask what anything about Atlanta's lineup when you were making those statements about Austin Riley, and that's because nothing is changing. Nothing's it's changing. Nacho Alvarez at third, it's Nick Allen at short, and we don't care.
It's sad that we don't care about Atlanta's lineup. Yes. At this point in the season, you kind of expect to be caring.
One of my great friends is a huge Atlanta fan. I hope he's not listening to this episode. He does listen, so I hope he didn't hear that comment. Who cares?
It happens. But they did get an addition. They claimed Cal Quantrill off of waivers after Miami threw him out there. And then he joins their rotation. Do we care about this?
Well, he gets the Mets on Saturday and then at Philadelphia next weekend. So no, for now, no, maybe matchup dependent going forward, but not this week.
Yeah. I mean, besides, you know, Hurston Waldrop doing good things and them calling him up, like Atlanta's at a point, and they have been at this point for a while, where they're going to do anything they can just to fill that rotation with a warm body. So they don't have to continue to call up prospects within the organization.
I mean, they're at the point when it's obvious, right? We're joking about it, but you know that they've mailed it in. So it's to the point now where why do you run Ronald Acuna Jr. out there every day?
Sure,
right? Let him get healthy. He just came back a week ago from another IL stint, and I think we may start seeing that from Atlanta soon.
Or at least on road games. You know what I mean? Let them sit on some road games. Like give the hometown fans their players that they came to see and they paid tickets for. But when they travel to Cincinnati, when they travel out, you know, to other whatever, yeah, give them a break. Let them go explore the town that they're traveling in. You don't even have to come into the dugout, Ronald. Just don't hurt yourself out there and have fun. Cool. So, speaking of, no, we'll go back to injuries again. Landon Roop hit the IL again after getting hit with a comebacker in his second start back from coming back from the IL. This one was, you know, just had nothing related to his last injury with his elbow. He just got hit in the comebacker, and then it looked like he might have twisted his knee as he went down. He had to be carted off. But Giants did some tests. They're saying that it's just inflammation at the moment. But, you know, we're kind of expecting the MRI to come back with something more conducive. Either way, he's on the IL. He's out for at least, you know, the minimum time. He'll miss, you know, probably one or two starts at minimum. Carson Wisenhunt returned to the San Francisco rotation to take his place. Our first Wisenhunt, are you, you know, he's, I'm sure he's been dropped in most places after getting demoted. He's going to be available. One other young pitcher to be, to spend your dollars on. He's probably lower on your waterfall bids between Bubba Chandler and Shane Bieber and anybody else. But is it kind of a sneaky, like one of those things where you're like, I hope I lose my top bids, or it Wisenhunt allows you to feel more confident about keeping your top bids a little bit lower on Bieber, on Bubba Chandler, because you've got Carson Wisenhunt at your disposal if you miss out.
I think so. And I think this is a sneaky for another reason too, Adam. For much of the season, we were afraid of the Cubs lineup. Recently, that hasn't been the case. And also versus lefties, recently the Cubs are 20th in baseball in terms of wOBA versus lefties in the month of August. And they have some of the fewer plate appearances, barely, not even quite 150 plate appearances versus lefties. But we do know as a team, the Cubs have not been performing nearly as well in recent weeks as they did early in the season. And then that would line him up for a two-step next week at Colorado, at St. Louis. This time of year, at Colorado, you know, Colorado's been up and down. There's been times Colorado's actually looked good or close enough to good compared to what we've seen from them recently that they kind of appear good to us. So I don't know if I'm throwing anybody in Colorado this time of year. You know, early in the season, we talked about we weren't necessarily as scared of that as we used to be. But getting a two-step at Colorado, eight at St. Louis, with him being a lefty and the Cubs floundering a little bit, yeah, I think this is kind of a sneaky move that because of at Colorado and because of the Cubs this week, the price is probably going to stay reasonable with the other guys available you mentioned. This is a guy you might be able to sneak through for a couple bucks.
Right. You talk about the Cubs doing so poorly. How much of that is driven by Kyle Tucker apparently playing with a broken thumb?
It does, you know, because he's pressing, obviously, but it's just affecting the rest of the lineup.
Yeah.
It really is. It appears to me when I try to watch as many games as I can. I've seen them out there a couple games. They do not look like the same team they did.
Sure. Right?
Now, part of it is we're realizing PCA, as good as his defense is, shouldn't be out there versus lefties. And the Cubs haven't made that move yet and need to. Mm-hmm. He's barely hitting over 100 versus lefties the second half, last I looked.
The closest they're coming to it is that they moved him down to the 7 hole today, facing a lefty instead of being in that 4 or 5 spot. But he's still in there. Yeah. but Tucker hit a home run today. So obviously everything is forgiven. So we'll see.
There we go.
All right. Last jumbled piece of news here. Lots coming out.
Because there's a lot.
A lot coming out of Boston. We'll start in their minor leagues. Which probably don't affect too much except for just overall depth. They do lose Cooper Criswell to some elbow inflammation and Vaughn Grissom hitting the minor league IL as well with right foot inflammation. If you're expecting them to be called up for a cup of coffee, probably not happening for the remainder of 2025. We'll see how the roster shakes up for 2026, but not interested in either one of them for the remainder of the season. More interested in their newly signed first base option in Nathaniel Lowe after DFAing Abraham Toro and then also calling up infielder David Hamilton as well for some speed options, probably off the bench. Let's stop there. There's more Red Sox news to get into, but we talked about this right before the show, and you talked about your overall excitement with Nathaniel Lowe. I'm going to go ahead and toot my horn a little bit for calling out the fact that I expected Abraham Toro to be DFA'd. I expected it to happen earlier, no matter how well he was performing. The Red Sox have had a history of kind of doing this, especially in the first base position. I'll point out, you know, Dominic Smith that they had on for a little while, and like, all right, even though you were tearing it up for about a week and a half, you're DFA'd as well. So obviously Abraham Toro, if you haven't already dropped him, you can go ahead and drop him. We'll see where he lands on. But Nathaniel Lowe as a first base option for the pretty well-performing Boston Red Sox offense, how excited are you for grabbing him in the leagues where he's available?
Huge. I am so excited about Nathaniel Lowe here. If he had been playing for another team, his overall numbers would look so much better than they do right now. He was sent out there for over 150 plate appearances versus lefties, and he is horrible versus lefties. Most other teams would not have had to do that. Versus righties this season, sure, he's a low batting average guy. We know that, 237. That's versus the righties that we want to see. That's the good one. He was about 170 versus lefties. 15 home runs, 11 doubles, 63 RBI in only 308 at-bats versus righties this season. Now with Boston, he will be sitting versus lefties. We will get that 230, 240 batting average instead of 190 or whatever his overall numbers are. And Boston faces right-handed pitching 6 out of 7 games they have this week. Love Nathaniel Lowe. He's my number one power target.
Nice. Yeah. As you're mentioning, Boston's not putting him out there against lefties. He's already sat two games since joining the team. Of course, both games being Monday and Friday when they face a left-handed pitcher. But did start at first base on Thursday, batting in the 5 spot. DH'd in his debut starting on that Tuesday game. At the 7 spot. So we'll see how he kind of slots in, even on a strong side of the platoon in this lineup playing in Fenway. That could definitely play up for him the remainder of the season. All right. Well, continuing on with Red Sox news, and I'm just going to call him the password because it's a lot easier than trying to print without a pronunciation guide in front of me. Johnston Nixon Garcia got called up for the Boston Red Sox, making his debut on Friday. But I want to give an extra shout out to Lamar Gibson, aka Inside Fastball, for giving him the nickname of the password many years ago while he was in the minors. And it stuck. And I'm so happy for that. I mean, it literally stuck everywhere. Major League Baseball's puts it on his like player card when they made the announcement he got the call up. It's just his name now. And Lamar was the one that coined that. So shout out Lamar. Overall, I mean, the word out of Boston's, you know, management was that, you know, listen, we weren't going to shake up a lot of stuff at the trade deadline. We got a good team. We're performing well. We didn't, they're, you know, making up the things. You're like, oh, why didn't you make any big moves? You're doing, it's like, well, we didn't want to shake up this great roster, which is, you know, usually baloney, for lack of a better word that I can use on this podcast. So to start seeing them then call up these prospects and kind of get them intertwined, obviously, Roman Anthony is kind of an exception there. He's been up for a while now. What expectations would you have as a non-Red Sox fan about Garcia's or the password's playing time for the rest of the season with this team that's fighting to hold on to their wild card spot?
Yeah. Outside looking in, I think he's mostly going to play versus lefties, but he could force the issue here, obviously, because the Red Sox may need David Hamilton defensively and on the base paths a little bit, but they do not want him in their lineup. Sure. So they could move Rafaela back to the infield versus righties and get Garcia in that way. There are ways for this to happen. Unfortunately, because coming into the season, I really liked David Hamilton for speed, and he just hasn't been able to get on base enough to use it. But he's still so valuable defensively. That would be the path that I would keep an eye out for. Right now, I don't think that is probably what we'll see this weekend, but I'd keep an eye on this. I could see David Hamilton sent packing again, and we see Rafaela to the infield more often, like he is versus the lefty here on Friday in the lineup, and then we would and Garcia in the outfield. I could see them doing this versus righties as well, but Boston does play a lot of lefty-righty matchups, so everything's got to work out just right for this to work for us.
I mean, and Garcia's earned this call-up as well. Like, yeah, he's been performing admirably, getting call-up. He started the season in Double-A, got the call-up after just 33 games, and he's been playing in Triple-A the other two-thirds of the season so far, going 66 games there before getting called up to Boston. 20 home runs between the two levels, 17 of them being at Triple-A. And so he's, he's batting .303 in those 66 games at AAA as well. So, he definitely earned this call up. I'm happy for him. I don't know how much to expect as far as from a fantasy perspective, if the volume will be there to get him where he needs to be, but that's actually not for his, growth. He doesn't have to be that guy. He doesn't have, he's not there to quote, get them to the playoffs. Like, he might be a good enough prospect on some teams to do that, but it's nice that he's out there to be able to play even if he ends up being on a short side platoon for the remainder of the season. I'm happy for the situation for him to be like, hey, I'm in Fenway Park. I'm playing in front of this, in front of these fans, and they're not expecting me to be the savior of this team. I could see him performing very well because he does not have, there's always pressure on anybody playing for a team or a market like the Boston Red Sox, whether you're in New York or LA or whatever. There are certain teams in certain Chicago, the Cubs and all that. I think this is good for him in general. I just don't know if I'm going to be able to get excited from a fantasy perspective to go out bidding highly on him. This weekend. He's going to get bid on, though. Like, if you don't bid on him, somebody's going to get him. He'll be third or fourth down in the waterfall bids. Somebody will end up grabbing him. So I probably won't have him anywhere for the remainder of the season, but I'll look for what kind of role he's going to be playing in 2026. Last piece of Red Sox news here kind of came through earlier today, officially breaking that Walker Buehler has been pulled out of the rotation of the Boston Red Sox, entering into the bullpen, probably in a long man type of role. I don't expect Walker Buehler to finish off the season as a replacement closer or even a seventh or eighth inning guy, but maybe a seventh and eighth inning guy that maybe could be good for him to finish out the season. Do you expect him to come back into the rotation before the end of the season?
Probably not, unless we see something drastic. I mean, this isn't the point in the season where you make this move if you think, oh, we're gonna figure something out here and put him right back in the rotation. That's not what you do this time of year.
Yeah. Red Sox haven't announced, any kind of replacement in the rotation. Of course, the first name that comes to mind is Kyle Harrison, who they got from San Francisco in the Rafael Devers trade. From everything I kind of read on the situation with Kyle Harrison, is they want to do a lot of tweaking, or they want to do a lot of tweaking with his arsenal, his pitch mix, and just make sure everything's good to go. And they, you want to do that at AAA. You don't want to have to do that, especially as I just mentioned, in the pressures of Fenway Park. I don't know that we see Kyle Harrison in Fenway at all this season. That's the feeling I'm getting at this point. Maybe he makes a spot start in the last 2 weeks of September just to help them line themselves up I don't know the International League standings. I don't know if Worcester is in the runnings for their playoffs, but maybe they wait until the end of the AAA playoffs and then call him up for a spot start again to help themselves line up their rotation for the playoffs. by giving a guy an extra day off or just what have you. But I don't expect much more than that. How about what are your expectations on Kyle Harrison?
Yeah, I don't know. Jason at Roster Resource, he's got Richard Fitz in this spot on Monday. And whoever it is, I'm interested in. At Baltimore, home versus Pittsburgh is a pretty nice two-step for the week. So we need to figure this out by Sunday evening, Adam. I'm sure you will hear from me trying to get verification on who you think. And by Sunday, we should know who it's going to be on Monday.
Sure.
Anyway. Sometimes though we still have TBDs listed on Monday morning, but we're going to want to figure this out, because at Baltimore and home versus Pittsburgh is a nice two-step. I think I'd lean with Jason here, probably Fitz, as much as I'd love to see Kyle Harrison. The first thought that came to my mind when you were talking Giants earlier, when I had saw the news earlier, the first thing that came to my mind is, oh, we're going to see Kyle. Oh yeah, he's not a Giant anymore. I'd love to see it, but I kind of lean with Richard Fitz here.
Well, here's the thing, is that Richard Fitz is already on the roster, and so I would do expect that to change, that TBD to change before Sunday or by Sunday. Now, if they were going to call up Kyle Harrison or anybody else from the minors, I would almost expect that TBD to stay TBD until Monday morning. Very similarly to what we're seeing with Mick Abel in Minnesota. We know it's Mick Abel, but they can't officially announce it because they haven't officially called him up to the roster. So just because if it's not Fitz, I expect that TBD to stay by the time Fab runs around. And then maybe you can start speculating on Harrison or somebody else.
Here's my question for you then. As long as the start isn't horrible, do you believe whoever it is Monday will pitch again on the weekend?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good information to have. That's good to know right there. We're looking at a two-step most likely.
I expect it to be Fitz, and unless he gets completely blown up, I expect Fitz to hold on to it for the next start as well.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. We finally made it through all that. And the timing is almost perfect. I'm looking at my time clock here, and we are at a perfect time to take another break. All right. Thanks for joining us once again on the Wire. 228 episodes later or into it, Kevin, still going strong, trying to finish out the 2025 season. And of course, we just went through a whole bunch of news. There's a whole lot of other news we did not touch on. Of course, you should still be listening to the First Pitch podcast with Jake Crumpler and Trevor Huth. They break down all the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games all the way through the end of the season. And they look ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. And Nick Pollock is still breaking down all the starting pitching starts and bulk followers who should be starters on his Plus Pitch podcast. Listening to that every weekday, wherever you get your podcast, you can get those. Let's get into actual recommendations with just five fab periods to go. We need our power to start us off, Kevin. Who's hitting some home runs? Who's getting some RBI for us? And who are we going to spend what little money we have left?
Yep. As I mentioned, my number one choice is Nathaniel Lowe. He is 51% rostered in 15s, 47 in 12s. So he's a pretty rare occurrence where the rostership percentage is almost identical there for 15 and 12 team leagues. But for all the reasons I stated, he's my top power target this week. Luis Matos back in San Francisco started versus a lefty and a righty first two games back, 0% rostered, already hitting the ground running on Friday, I believe, either Thursday or Friday. He had a nice game and he is not rostered anywhere. So Luis Matos, that's a pretty nice bat to be able to have 100% availability this time of year.
Yeah, that's and for him to get as much playing time as we expect to get, even on the strong side of a platoon, at least that strong side, we'll see plenty of power playing up in Fenway Park half the time as well. All right, we need some speed. I love the name you put on here, because as much as I kind of wanted to, I didn't drop him anywhere. So he's not available in my leagues. He's still riding, well, he was riding my bench until he started getting playing time, to talk to me about your speed option here, where he's available.
Well, the great thing about my speed option is if you used him this week, you got a couple of home runs.
Yes. Well, that was the thing. Everybody was hitting home runs on that.
It was great. Cause yes, I am starting Jose Caballero in a couple of spots here. Not getting all the starts, but still getting the stolen bases. I think in two of the last 4 weeks, he's had four stolen bases for the week. He's averaging about 2.5 per week still, more than anybody else in baseball. Regardless of playing time, he is our stolen base guy. Yes, he's almost universally rostered, but the reason I put him on the list here is he is available in 10% of main events and 17% of online championships. That's quite a bit of availability for probably the most guaranteed stolen bases out there, whether rostered or not, right? Playing every day or not. This is probably the best guy available, and in 12 teamers available in almost 20% of them. At this time of year, you're really giving up in other categories or playing time, which then in effect is definitely categories, at least the counting stats. But guys, that the matchups don't work out great this week, but guys like Miles Straw still stealing bases when they get their playing time. Short side platoon, some late inning pinch running appearances. So you can still get away with Miles Straw in a week like this one coming up, where Toronto's facing mostly righties. But these are the kinds of the guys we're looking at for the most part. So if he's available if you are one of the 10% of 15 team leagues or 17% of 12 team leagues, Caballero absolutely is the guy. And then guys similar to him, Miles Straw in Toronto, for example, he's available everywhere. So there's some speed out there, but you're giving things up.
I mean, if David Hamilton can get off, off the plate and get on base, sure. It seems I have nothing to back this up, because I need to look this up. I believe Caballero has more stolen bases off the bench than he does in games that he started. I
don't doubt that one bit. I think both of his two stolen base games last week were off the bench.
Yes.
Yeah.
I play him a lot in my daily moves league. And he's like the first guy on my bench.
Starting.
I put him on my bench when he's not starting, and then he steals bases. But if I have two guys, he's the only bench guy I got. So if I have two guys not starting, Caballero goes in.
He's in.
He becomes, he gets put in my starting lineup.
He's been my UT in a couple of 15 team leagues the last couple of weeks. So those two home runs were amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, everybody somehow was hitting multiple home runs in that game. That was Stanton had his first double home run game in 2 years. And that's mostly due to playing time, but yeah. Everybody was hitting bombs.
One other note, and it's tough, but when we're talking stolen bases, we are on who is Miami's opponent's watch, right? They're getting worse. The teams just ahead of them have actually gotten better. The gap is widening of how bad Miami is at stopping other teams' running games. And the New York Mets have a four-game series versus Miami. So I was looking at this. Unfortunately, the pitching matchups probably don't work out. We probably don't see Starling Marte. The one that I might give a shot here, he's been bad overall this season, but he started the last two games that were both versus lefties. We hadn't seen him since the last lefty they faced, clear back on the 5th of August. Tyrone Taylor, he still will steal a base, and he's been in there the last two games. If he can get in the lineup versus Miami next weekend, I expect at least a stolen base out of him.
There you go. And then you just need to put him in for half your lineup, and you're going to get him for a dollar. So there you go. Opportunity is a knocking, and we've got plenty of teams that have lots of games to play next week. Nobody with the 5-game work week, but plenty with the 7. including Baltimore, Boston, the New York Yankees, the Chicago White Sox, Atlanta, Miami, Philadelphia, your aforementioned New York Mets, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Arizona rounding it up. Everybody else with six games, though, so not a whole lot advantage there, just the added one day. Colorado will be away in Houston for the first three, but come back and host the Chicago Cubs for three. So the Cubs get to play in Denver for the weekend. Cincinnati will have the same kind of they'll leave their home park open as they travel to LA to face the Dodgers for three, but then host St. Louis for three over the weekend in Great American Small Park. Tampa Bay, though, leaves Tampa Bay officially all week as they go to Cleveland for three and Washington for three. But on the flip side, the other minor league park will be full with the Athletics hosting the Detroit Tigers for the first three and then the Texas Rangers for the weekend series of three games. So lots to take in there. Always good to know where your hitters are going to be taking advantage of, where your pitchers are going to be struggling. Anything else you want to consider, Kevin, who's got a good opportunity ahead of themselves for the following week?
Yeah, first, I just wanted to quickly mention CJ Cephas. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago. Things were looking good. Uncle Ted was big on him as well in the chat at the time, I remember. And if you picked him up, that first week did not go well. I think he was like 2-for-17. And then now this past week, he's been performing again. I like CJ Cephas this upcoming week. Cleveland doesn't have exceptionally great matchups. They are one of the 16 teams that only have a six game week rather than seven. I just didn't really know where to put him. You know, he's not a huge power guy, not just a speed guy, but I wanted to mention him because he still has availability, 70% rostered in main events, but only 12% in online championships. So, and I think he's 12-team viable. I think he'll get the playing time this week. In Texas, Cody Freeman, I'm very intrigued by, and the fact that they're facing so many lefties this week, everything I read about Cody Freeman was like his playing time will go away when Adolis Garcia comes back that Saturday. But next week with all these lefties, I feel like Adolis Garcia will be the designated hitter with Jock Peterson sitting versus these lefties coming off of the IL. So Cody Freeman still got one good week left in him. And Ty France as well, getting playing time over the past few games with the injuries going on. So Ty France worth looking at, but Cody Freeman, I like quite a lot for just this one week because of all the lefties Texas is facing.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you, especially, I mean, you do this all season long. You mention it every single week about the different matchups and what have you. But this is where you can make up a lot more of, you just make up a lot more ground by playing these matchups and spending your dollars, what few dollars you have left, in a smart manner. By looking at what these kind of matchups could provide as far as playing time, added playing time for those platoon splits, for those guys filling in for injuries, et cetera, et cetera. So good eyeballs there on the different matchups that we're seeing for next week. Speaking of matchups, we got to get into the starting pitching and all the other pitching categories to get us some of those sweet, sweet points. But before we do that, we'll take our last break. All right, Kevin, fill us in on opportunities for wins and Ks. I will start this off by just say Kyle Harrison does line up for a Monday start. His last start for Worcester was the 19th. That would put him on 4 days rest to come up on Monday. I still don't think it's happening, but he does line up. So just putting that out there. Maybe just
for, I like that. If it's still TBD Sunday night, I think that's worth a buck.
He didn't have a great outing. I mean, he went five. Yeah. He has gone five innings for his last four starts. But he let up three earned runs, seven hits. His walks have been quite a problem since coming over to Boston or Worcester. He walked one in this one. That was the least amount of walks he's had in about the last six starts. He walked four before that, three before that, two before that, six before that. And so we'll see if those tweaks are going to stick that the Red Sox have been talking about. So again, for that other reason, he hasn't really been performing. He hasn't given up all that kind of runs though in about the last eight or so starts. So we'll see. He does line up. I still don't think it'll happen, but something to watch. Who is slated to start though, Kevin, that we can more confidently be throwing our fab dollars at, besides the guys that we had been already talked about, right, in the news section?
That's where I'm going, because I want to make this clear that it's slim. I know we say this a lot when we're talking starting pitching, and there has been a couple of pretty decent weeks where the matchups lined up that I really like the starting pitching available, maybe two of the last four or five weeks. There's been some weeks that looked good. This week doesn't. The guys we talked about, the young debuts coming up, plus Bieber coming off injury, those are the top guys. And in spite of what they've done a couple of times recently, I still do not trust my Royals versus lefties. So I absolutely love Martin Perez of the White Sox this week. He gets the Yankees at the end of the week as well. This two-step, we've seen Martin Perez doing this for three or four seasons now. Yes, he can get that blow up once in a while, but more times than not, he's going to go out there and give us six innings and one earned run. Sometimes it's with two strikeouts, sometimes it's with seven, but the ERA will be there. So I'm chasing wins here. And the way the Royals for most of the season have struggled against lefties, I think there's a really good chance for a win in that game. And then he gets another opportunity versus the Yankees. Been a little better over this last week, but for the couple weeks prior to that, the Yankees couldn't score on anybody.
No, that's true. With or without Judge in the lineup.
Right.
It wasn't really just him being out either. So yeah, those are decent little matchups there. We'll see. That's not in Yankee Stadium either, so that's a good sign as well. All right, moving on from our volume categories and going into our ratio stabilizers as we just try to trug along in those categories in the final 5 weeks. Who are we adding to the list, or who more specifically is Rick Graham adding to our list? Because I know that is a big reference point for this category.
It is, and you do have to read his notes.
Yes.
And then scroll down a little bit on the list, on his list this is his holds list, his holds article that I'm looking at, and then click on Eric Sabrowski and pull up his pitcher list page. Oh goodness, it is bright red bars all the way to the top of the screen going across there. And Rick Graham's note on Sabrowski there for Cleveland, I think it's going all the way back to May that he's been this good, if I'm remembering the article correctly. And now I don't see it. But, yeah, Eric Sabrowski, he's got an ERA of 1 on the year. And pitching a lot for Cleveland out of that bullpen, becoming one of the most trusted guys. So, yeah, Eric Sabrowski fits right in with this category and the guys we talk about each and every week. Another one, and we have talked about this, I think either 2 or 3 weeks ago, Rick did bring this up as well. Edwin Ucita looks like the Edwin Ucita we were drooling over last season, over the past 2-3 weeks. And so love him out there as well.
So a lot of always good to have extra options to kind of rotate in and out based on playing time. That's why we're always adding a new name on here. Go back and read some of our show notes and or listen to some of our last couple of weeks episodes for a couple of extra names to put in there as well. We talked about a couple of different bullpens in the news section, Kenley Jansen being questionable for the remainder of the weekend. So the Angels having some spec plays. The different situations with, well, Houston, we're not specking. We determined already we're not specking on Craig Kimbrel here. Any other, and then we don't know for sure what's going to happen in LA. pretty sure Tanner Scott gets the first dab. As they think they're only in the seventh inning right now, so there is some time for that to get ironed out in LA. Maybe we'll know by the time we're talking about this section. But Kevin, any other bullpens worth either monitoring or speculating on as we, you know, move through and try to get as many saves as possible?
Yeah. Tanner Scott, where he's available, we talked about that. I still really don't have a great feel of what we're going to see in Baltimore. So if you're in a spot where you need to be speculating, yeah, I'd still grab Cano. I brought that up last week. I think what was the one other one I was looking at earlier here? The Rangers, right? I just watched the Rangers play a series against the Royals, and I have really no idea what they're doing. I don't know if it's going to be Phil Maton the rest of the way. Charm Armstrong came in early for an appearance, much earlier in the game than I expected to see him this week, or he would be my guy, and maybe he is still who I should be speculating on there in Texas. But I just don't have a great feel there. JoJo Romero in St. Louis, we just haven't seen a lot of that. I think we, you know, there for a couple of weeks, we had a lot of options. Of course, with the trade deadline, that moved things around, but it wasn't just due to the trades. A week or two prior to that, there were still some things that were clearing up for us. So we had guys to go after if we needed saves. We were still talking that way last week. Now this week, all of a sudden, it looks pretty dry to me. If I need saves, I'm hoping Tanner Scott was dropped.
Interesting piece of news that we left out that doesn't really affect our bidding because he's gone everywhere anyway. Felix Bautista is going to be out all of next season after having his shoulder surgery to repair, you know, leave after he left a couple weeks ago, the Baltimore situation. I mean, looking ahead, what is Baltimore going to do? I mean, they literally traded away their entire bullpen, the top end of their bullpen, and or lost them. They're not going to get their closer back next year. Do you expect the Baltimore Orioles to want to come back to where they were last year, winning 100 games and all that, and go out and pay for a closer? Or is their 2026 closer trying out for the job right now? I didn't put you on the spot. We weren't going to talk about this.
if it's me, I'm going out and getting a closer this offseason. But right, we remember last offseason, we believe that the GM in Baltimore had the okay to spend money and chose not to. Mm-hmm. Had the okay from ownership to spend money and still chose not to.
Right.
So we have no idea what we're going to see Baltimore do, is what I'm saying. If I'm the general manager, I'm bringing in someone established, much like I said last offseason with the Yankees. And Baltimore doesn't have a Luke Weaver, but I didn't think the Yankees would, as good as Luke Weaver had been, you're not going into the season counting on him to be your ninth inning guy all year long if you plan on not only making the postseason, but making a deep run. And if that's in their plans, which it should be with this young core that they have, they should be just opening up a window that should be very wide for several years.
Right.
You go get a ninth inning guy. You go get the best one available.
And we've been down this road already with Baltimore when they lost Felix Bautista the first time for the entire season. Right. Yennier Cano came in. Acted, you know, he performed admirably in the final month or so of the season. Got really excited about him, and then they bring in none other than Craig Kimbrell to basically take over the role for, you know, at least the first half of the season at that time. So they did. They went out and got somebody. Was it the right somebody? Obviously not, but they did go out and get somebody. The question is, are they going to do the same thing? Is there that Craig? I mean, Krimble's going to be a free agent. He'll be available. Whether or not they want to do that again, hopefully not the case.
I mean, I know Baltimore, right? They've had Bautista, and so the it's not the same situation, but with the shape that their bullpen is in now, all they have to do is look at Philadelphia and what a difference it makes to have that ninth inning guy that you're comfortable sending out there every time you have a lead in the ninth inning. Philadelphia hasn't had this for a while, and now that they do with that trade for Duran, you know, Philadelphia's looked awesome this past couple of weeks since the deadline.
Sure. Kyle Vinnegan, he'll be available. Yeah. He'll be a free agent. I think Bednar actually has one more year of control. So even though he was traded finally, he'll be with the Yankees probably. There were plenty of closer like players traded this offseason that will probably be either not being giving arbitration or will be free agents. I'm gonna check. I think is Helsley his contract up as well? Yeah, Ryan Helsley will be available. So there will be names to be purchased on the free agent market that can go back to closing out games. Also, in your keeper leagues, in dynasty leagues, keep that in mind. These guys that were traded into situations that are less advantageous right now, Ryan Helsley being the most prominent one, very well will go right back to closing out games somewhere in 2026. So makes a nice little spec ad if you have a team that is not in the runnings for your playoffs or you're not going to do anything this year. Make those spec ads in those situations too. All right, we got through all of our categories and you already spoiled your wild card. Sal Stewart will always be in our hearts in this section as well.
Yes.
anybody else though, besides Bradish, or if you want to speak a little bit more about Kyle Bradish, by all means, that we can still, if we have any money left over to speculate, to use it on a speculation.
You brought this up earlier and it made me realize why sometimes I have such an issue with this category is because other than my dynasty leagues, I'm almost exclusively on NFBC. So these players aren't available in the leagues I play in, right? It is why that I have a difficulty with it sometimes. I realized when you brought that up earlier. But yeah, Kyle Bradish, I put down here. I was such a, and this is probably a warning flag. I was so in on Bradish when he got injured. And so that may be a warning flag that maybe you shouldn't be in on Kyle Bradish as much as I am, but I'm excited to see him come back.
There you go. And we talked a lot about Baltimore in this episode, but
Uncle Ted has a good one. Roki Sasaki is on rehab. We'll see him soon. That's a good one.
There's a good speculation. It's tough too. I mean, Roki Sasaki is a different example because he's obviously playing for a good team that is in contention. Mm-hmm. As a heads up there, we might not see any kind of save opportunity. The Dodgers are up, or they're down by one run going into the bottom of the eighth inning right now. And so we might not get any clarity in that, at least not today. By the time you're listening to this on Sunday, maybe we see something on Saturday. But Sasaki is an example where, like, yeah, I can trust that even if the Dodgers go every sixth day or every fifth or sixth day with him, and he never gets a two-start week, which is what I would expect, especially with Shohei Ohtani getting hurt recently, who is back, by the way, but I'm not sure if he'll be pitching, in the next week or two. He avoids the IL altogether, though, which is nice. The rehabs that come back on teams that aren't in contention are the ones I worry about. So Bradish, is coming into a situation where, again, they need a warm body to fill up the bullpen, to fill up the rotation. But how much they want to push him in the final month of the season would be my question. And maybe that means he gets skipped a start, or maybe they keep his innings down to like three or four innings, at least for the first couple of starts back, because they don't need to be pushing him in this scenario. So it's always, always different variables to consider based on team context. All right. Well, Kevin, that's going to do it for our recommendations and our news. Close us out, though, with any other piece of advice or words of wisdom that we can take to the bank as we fill out our fab bids for the fifth to last time this season.
There are some funny schedules, right? I missed. I don't think we brought it up last week that there was this off day Saturday for a couple teams this week. I missed that. I was caught a little off guard when I was setting my lineups this morning for the weekend that, right. Ooh, I got a couple guys only playing two games, and I had not planned for that. I think I completely whiffed on that. So with head-to-head league playoffs starting, right, we really got to pay attention to the schedules and the matchups, right? A team like Texas this week facing four lefties, and three of them over the weekend, that can alter things greatly for what could be your one shot at advancing throughout the week if you're setting your lineup for the week. So, yes, enjoy this. But this is the best time of year, right? We have the Dodgers and Padres playing a three-game series right now, a 2-1 ball game in the eighth inning and a one-game difference for the division with 5 weeks to go. This is awesome. We have playoffs starting in head-to-head leagues. Right, we got our stretch runs in our roto leagues. We're already seeing draft boards for 2026. Enjoy this, but really pay attention to the schedules and matchups, especially when you're setting those playoff lineups.
Yeah, I've got a whole in my, well, I have two head-to-head leagues where I'm playing daily moves, and there's obviously playoffs involved in that. But for my home league, I've got my 3 weeks. I've had a sheet already built out.
You do that all year.
Yes, I update it as my roster updates. I plug it in. And then as we get a little bit closer to the end of the season, I'm like, all right, who could I be playing in this round? Let's compare how many hitters they have and how many off days they have. Oh, do I need an extra hitter during that week? Or can I go with an extra pitcher? Just being prepared about who you're, especially in the head-to-head versions of these, you only have to worry about the one team. You don't have to worry about everybody else, like you do in a roto. And you just have to, win. You don't have to win 8-0 or 10-0. You only have to win 5-4. Like, you just need to take more categories than your opponent, and you move on. And so it's if you play head-to-head win-loss, then it's the same all year round. So one of my head-to-heads is win-loss. The other one is categories. Categories, you flip the script. You're like, hey, you want that bye. Like, I'm in line to get my bye, the first round bye in that league. And it's because I won a handful of games 10-0. And great. It felt like college football, where it's like you just need to ring up the score as much as possible to move yourself up the ladder. But when it comes to playoffs times, I don't care. Like, I'll make whatever drops I need to make to guarantee those 5.5 categories that I'll win in that week.
That's a great point. Also, head-to-head playoffs, right? You know which ones of your league opponents will wait till the last second to change their lineup before they can. And you know which ones are so excited and so anxious that their lineup is set on Sunday night. You can make decisions based on that.
Yes.
How many relievers are they starting? How many players do they have for Texas that won't play against those four lefties they're going to face this week, right? Mm-hmm. Check your opponent's lineup, and you know if they're going to make changes at the last second or not, and make decisions based on the ones that won't.
And then you also know the opponents that are making moves at all. So, like, we only have four, you can only make four moves or four add drops throughout the course of the week. And man, that's a whole nother piece of strategy. Like, or do I use my first two? Like, do I use one last week for this week? Because if you make a move on Sunday for ours, that ad counts for the week prior. So you can make five ads for the following week. Set yourself up for a double, for a two-step if you picked up the right guy, but then you handcuff yourself like, well, I can't drop him for until he makes his start on Saturday. How do I use my other ad? Oh, man, I don't know. As much as we always talk about NFBC and obviously in roto and style, yeah. I love my head-to-head matchup teams, just because it's a whole nother set of strategy that we don't talk enough about.
Right. And it's fun.
Yes. That's that's a good way to end it right there. Because it's fun. Because it's supposed to be fun.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Well, that is going to do it for episode 228 of On the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. After all that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.